Choke point.
Come for the choke point. Stay for the
yard
wood
advice.
Chopper yeah. advice.
That's
yeah.
Right. Yeah. Choke points. Bellevue does not want to see the kind of bad behavior on light rail trains that riders see through the Seattle area. And so they're doing something about it by creating their own transit police force. Here's Chris.
And you could expect to see those uniformed Bellevue police officers riding the light rail trains on the east side when service begins between Bellevue and Redmond on Saturday. And they are there for one reason.
They are there to basically provide that kind of guardianship and to also make sure that folks know that if there is crime, or even in the fear of crime, we're here to reduce it.
Bellevue's police's Drew Anderson says the new blue unit, BLU, was created just for this job thanks to the leadership of the city council.
We were very fortunate from the city council to give us approval to create this brand new unit called the Bellevue Light Rail Unit, to where they are brand new officers. There are going to be five officers, one consisting of a sergeant, four actual, you know, uniformed officers, and it will grow.
This unit will not be doing fare enforcement, and it will be working directly with King County Sheriff's Office, which runs the transit police for Sound Transit. Anderson says the unit will be on trains around the six stations inside the Bellevue city limits and also checking out the big garage in South Bellevue.
Make sure to provide riders and families the positive experience on a transit line and to really prevent any crime that could happen in the area.
So riders are encouraged to report suspicious behavior or activity to this unit, as well as the transit police. But this is a first time they've ever done this, where any jurisdiction within light rails, inside the county, is providing its own police force to monitor what's happening on the trains. So we'll see how this goes.
Yeah, well, what an idea to begin the service by saying, hey, safety and your perception of safety is our number one priority.
Exactly. Here. And so this is an interesting step for Bellevue, and we'll see how it goes. But it's not just the crime and thoughts of that Bellevue Police has been working on, because, as you know, anytime you open up a light rail service, especially sometimes at grade, there's some issues to deal with there, because they've been working with first responders to prepare for the inevitable accidents that are going to happen with this line opening. I mean, the trains cross several intersections at grade. That puts trains, bikes, pedestrians, and cars all in harm's way if someone isn't paying attention. I mean, how many years has light rail been running through Seattle's Rainier Valley?
Yep.
And we still see accidents by cars, people, bikes going in front of the trains. So Bellevue's Drew Anderson, who I was talking to about all of this, says that everybody just needs to be prepared for this.
We are doing our part. The system is doing its part, but we're also asking drivers and pedestrians to do their part,
especially around those intersections.
We know that this is new. And what's the one thing we know, Chris, when things are new? People are learning a new system. There's a little bit of change. So we're asking folks to be more vigilant and know that if there's a train coming, don't try to dodge the arm.
The train always wins in an accident. No doubt about it. The 6.6-mile starter line from the South Bellevue Station to the Redmond Technology Station opens to the public on Saturday. There's a ribbon-cutting ceremony at the downtown Bellevue Station at 10 a.m. Service begins around 11 a.m. Trains are going to run every 10 minutes from 5:30 in the morning to 9:30 at night, 7 days a week. The line will eventually connect to Seattle over Lake Washington when construction and testing there is complete. That's scheduled to happen sometime in late 2025.
And that's a firm date now, right?
Well, there have been many firm dates. Let's not forget we were supposed to be across the lake into Redmond by 2020.
Yeah.
And then 2023.
Right.
And here we are, 24. So it's about as firm as Sound Transit can be.
Okay, we'll leave it at that.
But it's a good thing. I recommend everybody. Our afternoon traffic reporter, Nate Connors, is going to go take one of the first rides today for our media tour, and he'll be reporting back for us on Seattle's Morning News and other shows throughout the day. So we're excited to see how it goes.
Yeah, and again, very important. The train always wins.
Yeah.
Don't try to beat the train.
No, there's no doubt the train will be 100% in that.
Yeah, let's talk about presidential immunity. The Supreme Court is now hearing Donald Trump's lawyer with the opening argument on that issue today. Hanging in the balance, basically, all the other federal cases against Donald Trump. The concept of presidential immunity has gone unsettled since Gerald Ford pardoned Richard Nixon and spared Nixon from going to trial. CBS's Linda Kenyon is covering the court today. I asked her about Trump's argument.
Well, they are, in fact, hearkening back to the Nixon administration when former President Ford pardoned former President Richard Nixon, saying that, This is a situation that shows that a president of the United States has immunity for prosecution for official acts he committed while in office. In other words, Donald Trump, now a former president, could or could not be held accountable for actions most specifically regarding, for example, the January 6th insurrection, efforts to overturn the results of the presidential election. So this is, of course, a very difficult case. No easy cases come before the U.S. Supreme Court. And so all eyes are going to be watching to see if the court is leaning one way or the other on the immunity issue. And this is a case, by the way, that doesn't affect just immunity issues in general, but this affects the fact that former President Trump is facing several criminal trials. And if he is found to be immune from prosecution, that could stop all of the other trials in their tracks.
Right. So is this an all or nothing thing? The president's either immune from any kind of accountability or he's not? Or could it be limited in some way to, for example, election interference?
Yeah, well, that is really wherein lies the big question about what the court could do. It could make an absolute decision on the immunity case, but there are possibilities that it could give a somewhat less sweeping decision. In other words, it would say, for example, that it has to be taken by each individual case and remanded to the lower courts. So that would even further delay a decision before the November election, which is exactly what the prosecution does not want to see happen. Even now, given the fact that a trial is starting today on the immunity issue, the hearing in the Supreme Court today, does not mean that there will be a decision before the November election. Of course, there could be if the court decides to fast-track this case, and of course, the prosecution is hoping that it will. The defense is hoping that it won't. But fast-tracking in the Supreme Court is not exactly fast in the eyes of the general public. It could still take a couple of months at least.
CBS's Linda Kenyon. So I asked her, how far could the court go in its ruling on this case?
If the former president is found to have immunity from prosecution and he is reelected, for example, he could do all sorts of things, not the least of which is, you know, theoretically speaking, eliminate his political opponents. And I put eliminate there that you couldn't see in air quotes. You can interpret what you wish from that word eliminate. But there would be nothing that anyone could do about it. Let's go even further in the case of, trying to prognosticate what a president can do while in office. A president could declare himself or herself a president for life. And if there is no checks and balances within the various branches of government, and the president has already been declared immune from prosecution, he could be president for life. That's the end of a democratic system of government where the people elect somebody every 4 years.
Yeah. So the only reason we had the approach to the presidency we do is that George Washington decided not to become a king way back when.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the very bedrock of our system of government. That is the bedrock of our nation. So, yeah, the former president had said that he would be a dictator on day one or only on day one. We can parse that statement. But nonetheless, if he is found immune from prosecution for any acts he commits as president, he could, in fact, do that. Or any future president could, in fact, do that. So, you know, this has so many wide-reaching implications that could upend our entire system of government and our democratic process.
CBS's Linda Kenyon. Thanks, Linda.
Well, thank you.
The Daily Dose of Kindness. It is brought to you by Heritage Homecraft. In the Valley of Sin City, community members are coming together to help feed Las Vegas. I've been singing Feeding Las Vegas all morning. I had to get that out. It's part of an initiative formed by a local father-son duo to give back to the community as rising grocery costs continue to put a strain on household budgets everywhere. This week, hundreds of people lined up for the Feed Vegas food drive, waiting to fill up their bags with free groceries, arriving hours before the event began. Las Vegas resident Guadalupe Rodriguez telling local CBS affiliate KLAS.
Got in line 3 o'clock this morning. And I'm very happy to able to get some food to my house.
Got in line at 3 o'clock in the morning. The Feed Vegas Food Drive has been providing groceries to the community for more than a year. Another resident who's legally disabled and blind said it's one of the only ways he's able to provide food for himself.
Food is very expensive. It's helping me on the food bill, where I can save a little money here and there. Everything counts.
The food is donated by organizations and warehouses that have an influx of supplies. In addition to groceries, people also receive free meals from nearby food trucks.
The Washington Department of Transportation says it has finished an investigation into a former employee's claims that he was told to lie about the impact Washington's climate laws would have on gas prices. KAR News Radio's Kate Stone is here with more on what this internal investigation uncovered.
This is about Scott Smith. He's a former transportation planner for WashDOT. He calls himself a whistleblower, and he's actually filed suit against the state. Now, WashDOT did its own investigation here of his claims, and they just released the results of that last night. They said there's no strong evidence to support any of his claims. Now, Smith says last year he was pressured by the governor's Office of Financial Management and WashDOT to change the numbers in his reports that indicated the cap and trade program was significantly impacting the cost of fuel. He predicted the state's Climate Commitment Act would raise gas prices by close to 50 cents. And he talked about it when he filed the lawsuit in March.
I couldn't not include these kind of impacts on my numbers because they're embedded in them. Or every user in the state of Washington probably noticed in January the prices just shot up by about 50 cents.
Now, Smith says when he refused to change those numbers, he says he was forced out of state service. He says he was retaliated against first, being denied leave to spend time with his mother around Thanksgiving, and ultimately forced to retire early.
The bottom line here is that I did my job. I refused to jimmy the numbers and was shown the door by an agency that I served with integrity in a field that I worked in for decades.
Now, he is being represented by the conservative advocacy group Citizen Action Defense Fund, which has already filed several complaints against the Climate Commitment Act. They are openly against it. But Smith says that there were instructions from multiple government agencies to lie about the impact. But state officials say that's not true. They say a review of thousands of emails and documents and interviews with employees didn't turn up any proof of those claims, and there's absolutely no support for Smith's allegations regarding the integrity of the state's transportation forecast, aka how it would impact gas prices. They also said his position was not eliminated by WashDOT, but by state lawmakers who passed a law that made his position redundant. Now, Smith's lawsuit is still going forth in court, so we will see what happens there.
Okay, so how did the state get the number so wrong then? Who is responsible for putting in that number that turned out to be so wrong?
Well, according to the state, they didn't get the numbers wrong. They are still claiming that the Climate Commitment Act did not have an impact on gas prices, or didn't have the impact that that a lot of people are saying that it did. So that is still a very contested claim. So, however, we've done some coverage on it that has shown that there's at least been some impact from the climate laws.
So those prices at the pump are an illusion?
Well, they're not an illusion, but there are a lot of factors that play into it, as Sully can probably tell you from his back and forth with the governor. Obviously, we have more limited access to raw fuel here because of the pipeline access and other things, but it's been pretty well established that the governor's office's claims that the Climate Commitment Act had a negligible effect on fuel prices
is suspect.
That's
what I'm asking. I mean, it's pretty clear that they made a prediction. It had to be based on something. We still don't know what it was based on.
Right. Okay. Well, this lawsuit is claiming that they were told to lie about it. And yeah, the investigation here is saying that there is no proof that they were that Scott Smith was specifically told to lie about
this. Okay, but if it wasn't a lie, then there was some level of incompetence there because they got the figure wrong.
Yeah,
right?
the goal was, from ecology, Kate, was pennies. The governor said it'd be pennies.
The now infamous pennies
quote. Some would say, based on the evidence, it raised it as much as 40 40 cents a gallon. Uh-huh. But that impact has actually come down, as Kate well knows, because the no one is buying the auction credits at the high price that they were last year. Many of them are hedging that the voters are going to overturn the CCA. Right. So that's what's driven down that difference. The overall price of gas has gone up, but that's a national issue.
We've kind of
our
plateaued.
Gap between Oregon and Idaho,
right,
and California has stayed about the same. So there's a lot going into
The impact of the climate laws appears to have plateaued. Now, the question is, from this lawsuit, were state officials, specifically Scott Smith, told to cover it up? And that's what will be decided in court.
Kate Stone. Thank you, Kate.
Thank you.
Ooh, let's move on to another complicated topic. We have an inside look at a critical meeting between the U.S. Department of Justice and the families of victims of two deadly Boeing MAX 8 crashes. Cairo News Radio's Heather Bosch joins us live with more.
For many of the families of the 346 people who died in the MAX 8 crashes,
the victim families feel like Boeing has gotten away with murder.
Attorney Mark Lindquist there. He represented dozens of families involved in those crashes 5 years ago. He was at yesterday's meeting with the Justice Department where the DOJ updated families on the criminal case against Boeing, specifically its decision to pause that case after Boeing agreed to pay billions of dollars and improve quality.
The deferred prosecution agreement between Boeing and the Department of Justice was set to expire 2 days after the Boeing MAX 9 incident with the door plug blowout.
Families say it is evidence Boeing has violated the agreement. He says at the meeting they did discuss the door plug blowout on that MAX 9 in January, but
Department of Justice said, number one, they have not yet made a decision on whether or not they're going to ask the judge to find a violation of the deferred prosecution agreement. And number two, they hadn't yet decided on whether or not they might ask the judge for an extension to consider and investigate whether or not there's been a violation of the deferred prosecution agreement.
So no decision on whether that criminal case will move forward, which he says is frustrating for these families. Many have reached civil settlements with Boeing, but he says for real justice, they want the government to pursue criminal charges. Now, I did reach out to Boeing for comment. I have not heard back. Colleen and Dave,
thank you.
So let's talk about it, because nothing less than our football future is hanging in the balance
right.
this morning.
That's right.
The NFL draft tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And did I hear earlier that Michael Penix might be headed for the Seahawks?
From Mike Salk.
You can tell that that's not accurate by the way your voice broke up like you were singing a song. But we'll get to that in a second. And okay. I also have a question for you at
What's
the end
that?
Of this segment. At the end of the segment.
At the end of the
this
segment.
This is the 2024. It is day one of the draft, and I am super excited. So everybody know who they want, who they're going to pick. I told you before, and I'll tell you again if you guys remember. If you ever hear any expert come on and tell you, I think the Seattle Seahawks are going to take this player, what did I tell you before?
Don't believe it.
Don't believe it. I have never guessed it, so I'm not going to guess it. But I will do this for you.
Yes.
The Seattle Seahawks don't need a quarterback because they just, and which is Michael Penix Jr., they don't need to take one in the first round because, number one, they already have Geno Smith. He's slated to make $12.7 million this season.
Who's the backup, though?
Sam Howe, who they traded for in the offseason. Sam Howe is a really good quarterback. As a matter of fact, if you ask me, gee, who would you take in the draft over Sam Howe right now? Maybe one or two quarterbacks. Maybe one. Sam Howe's a really good quarterback, so
great
I think the
awesome.
Seahawks are good there. Now, last season in the first round, they took a cornerback in Witherspoon. And then, of course, they took a wide receiver in Jaxon Smith-Njigba. So it's fair to say that coming into this first round, they probably won't go skilled position. Skilled positions are wide receiver, DB, quarterback, safety, that kind of deal. Now it is time to... You know how sometimes you've been dating a lot of like the really good looking men?
Here we go.
Right,
yeah.
The really good looking men. But then sometimes you just say, you know what? Maybe I want to date a big guy. Maybe I want to date a guy. You know what I mean? He's a little bigger, but he's got a good personality.
Okay.
That's the offensive line, okay? The offensive line right now, this is an area in which the Seattle Seahawks do need to address. There is a lot of offensive line, great talent in this draft. If the offensive line is good, the run game is good, Colleen.
Mm.
If the offensive line is good, the quarterback is protected. A lot of good things happen when you have an offensive line.
I'm just saying, a lot of good things happen when you have a good offensive line.
Very good. I feel like we've always had an issue with the O-line on this team. Am I wrong?
That's evergreen statement for every team.
For every team. Okay.
Right. When, here's the thing. When things go, remember this, everyone. When things go right, for an example, you're watching the game. Oh, my goodness. Did you see that pass? Did you see that catch? Did you see that? It's touchdown, right?
Yeah.
Nobody ever says, oh, my gosh, in order for all that to happen, did you see that big guy make that block? Nobody says that. But only our good buddy Sully appreciates the offensive line or the long snapper, right? Those are the things that's what I'm talking about.
I always watch the line. It's so much more fun. Everybody knows where the ball is going. You got to watch the big uglies up front.
That's a great piece of advice, though. A new way to watch the game, at least
for me.
What
do you got, Dave Burbank?
I would be so excited, ecstatic, if we got an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman. But I get this sinking feeling every time the draft comes around for the Seahawks, which is day one. Day one is just round one, right?
Are you about to say trade down?
They're going to trade out of the first round. They're going to pick up more picks, and those guys might end up, you know, being great stars. But as a Seahawks fan who's watched this last decade, I always just want them to take someone that we know in the first round. I feel like it's either someone we don't know or they just trade out and then we're just left empty-handed on the first day.
What do you think the root of that is for you, David, needing somebody familiar to you? Is that a psychological thing? Do we need to have some therapy here?
Wow,
first?
Okay, yeah.
I'm curious.
Traffic?
Yeah.
The reason as to why, David, you're that way is because of the 13 drafts that John Schneider has been in charge of as GM, they've only traded in that situation 11 out of 13. So there's a reason. Hey, before we go and get the traffic, Dave Ross, bruh. What's been up with your hair lately? You have been slicking it back, fam. I've noticed that.
Yes.
What's going on?
I'm lazy. I want to be able to get ready in 5 minutes, and so I've lowered the priority of my hairdo.
It's not that deep.
There's not that much there
now,
anyway.
Do you stand in the mirror and comb it back like the Fonz? No. Do you say things like, hey, I'm Dave Ross?
No,
hey.
I haven't done that for years, but no, I just have my eyes closed, and the best way to comb your eyes closed is just straight back. You can just feel it on your way out.
But you got it. But I've noticed it. You're slicking it back, fam.
Yeah, because it's long. I haven't had a haircut in a while.
Grown it out like your
None
wife?
None of your business.
Jeez, bye.
Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. Thanks for listening to the show's podcast. We're happy you're here.
And you can keep up with the show and find some of the stories from today online at MyNorthWest.com.